This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 17th of August, 1951. The title of this lecture is Motion and the Tone Scale. This tape is 46 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Please note, this tape has periodic sound distortions, as did the original master recording.
Here's an order from Ivan Willis, Vice President, Industrial Relations, International Harvester. Impressed, please send additional copies, 12 copies, Science of Survival. Bill me, sending my copy of chart to John at Saucony. Congratulations. Well, we're getting someplace with this. Well, tonight I have to cover about 118 hours of lecturing and about 2 hours and a half. So did you ever hear anybody run back a tape, one of these tapes? It sounds like Donald Duck. So if I start speeding up like that, somebody signal me. The first thing I would like to do is give you a very quick review of what was covered last night on the subject of motion and emotion. These two things are very closely related. I want to give you a very precise example of how motion and emotion go together. A human being has two strips on either side of his brain. Each strip is a duplicate of a human being. It's actually a little man hanging by his heels, a thin sheet of nerve fiber, you might say. Actually, they seem to be switchboards. And, for instance, the hand is very exaggerated. The tongue is very exaggerated. But otherwise, these are quite close to a real human being. And this one goes to the motors. You might say the muscles. That's the motor switchboard. This, you might say, is evidently the thought switchboard. Don't know too much about structure, but this makes a good analogy. Now, this motor switchboard, very interesting. A fellow thinks, here's I, sitting in here, you might say. And this fellow thinks, move the index finger. So the thought, move the index finger, causes that. The sensory switchboard to wiggle. There's a thought impulse which is sufficient to wiggle that, and then you get a buildup here, possibly on the order of a photoelectric relay system, whereby you take a thousandth of a watt and you can build it up to a kilowatt. So it's only a thousandth of a watt of thought permits the sensory little finger to move. And possibly some mechanism in here builds up so that you've got maybe a watt of current which transfers down through the nerve trunks and out to the fellow's index finger. And the fellow's index finger moves. In other words, he thinks, move the index finger. That registers on the sensory switchboard, kicks over here into a higher magnitude, and the index finger moves. Now, these switchboards are probably more complex, certainly more complex than anything Bell Laboratories is building or working on. Professor McCulloch, he's the chair of psychiatry at the University of Illinois, I think, did a good piece of work. I'm very glad he did that. It doesn't make the whole field barren. He figured out if the human mind were done in terms of modern electronics, you built a machine with vacuum tubes and electricity, which could do a lot of the things the human mind could do. It would require enough electricity to light the city of New York. It would require Niagara Falls to cool it. And it would require, if vacuum tubes were 1 cent apiece, $1 million worth of vacuum tubes. The life of a vacuum tube lets you figure out how long that machine would run uninterrupted, doing computations and calculations such as the human mind will do. It would run uninterrupted 1/18th of 1 second. Then you'd have to replace a tube. Now, this machine, this computer, is a very interesting one. It does all these various computations, handles all of these various motor impulses, and it takes three-dimensional television in color and sound. It records it. It will make tapes for replay of those things. It does an enormous amount of memory storage, so forth. In addition to all that, it's portable. You see that there's quite a piece of equipment here, which is all boiled down into a small package. That's why hardly anyone knows anything of structure. They can get into the brain with a probe or something of the sort and wiggle part of it, and some other part of it will wiggle. It's experimentation on the crudity of galvanometers and frogs. You know, you take a dead frog and you shoot him full of a static electricity and he'll jump. You get a nerve reflex action. Well, very little is known about this, but it seems reasonable, these assumptions which are being made, and although I am taking this data from a field which is in poor repute as far as accuracy is concerned, that is to say, psychiatry, psychology, their accuracy is not good. Nevertheless, these panels would seem to answer no other purpose than just that. And they give you a switchboard, a picture of a switchboard system by which every nerve line in the body can connect up. Now, every nerve in the body, every nerve ending in the arms, the legs, the torso, and so forth, seems to have a connection in here. This makes a great big switchboard which is running on a certain amount of current. Now, in order to make this thing work, and the only reason for these two strips that I can see, because believe me, when this thing is written up and drawn up in the medical textbooks, they have so little concept of what it takes to make an item run that they just keep assigning names, most beautiful, wonderful names you've ever saw in your life, and they don't tell you what these functions are. But you see that there has to be a build-up system. Now, if that's not correct and doesn't turn out right, why, that's my fault. Don't blame it on medicine. Certainly, we have a computer system in here, at least the switchboard of one, because we don't even know that thought is done in the body. We don't know that. We know that there's a system running, and we know that the nerve fibers do carry something very like electricity. And that, by the way, interestingly enough, doesn't seem to be life force. It seems to be the current force that is definitely physical energy, physical universe energy, some sort. It goes at the rate of about 10 feet a second, by the way. The flow along one of these nerve lines is about 10 feet a second. That's why the Brontosaurus, after a while, had to develop a sub-brain in his tail. Because there he was, terrifically long, and some Tyrannosaurus Rex would come along in a puckish mood and stamp on the Brontosaurus's tail, and the Brontosaurus would know about it several seconds later. And quite a few seconds later, by the way, they ran about 80 feet. So he'd turn around and there'd be a piece of his tail gone. This is non-survival. Now, to move that tail, he would have to think, ah, impulse received from tail. Pain, move tail. There goes the impulse back to the tail, you see. And, well, the tail's gone. That's too late. This whole nervous system that goes along with mammals, reptiles, and so forth becomes very rapidly non-optimum above the size of a man. Actually, a man, even a man, is just a little bit too big for an efficient level on this system. It takes a man about a sixth of a second to pull his toe out of the way. All right. Here you have this switchboard, I say, and here's I think something. This goes into an impulse, and if you've got an idea of one of these big telephone exchanges down here, you've probably seen pictures of these big telephone exchanges with transcontinental calls, all the transcontinental calls going through the switchboard with a very angry and efficient supervisor, and all the girls working at top speed with all hands full of cables and lines and plugging them in and number please and so forth. That would be about the amount of activity which it takes to do that. I mean, there's so many structures and actions involved in getting a message down to a channel, much less that or that. Oh, boy. I don't think aren't enough plugs and so forth down here at a local telephone exchange to handle as many message impulses as it would require to do that. You stop and think of the number of muscles, the number of bones, the number of joints, the skin tension, the endocrine rebalance, the energy, the oxygen input, on and on. I mean, everybody's got to be told about the whole situation. The whole body is kept informed about the body's operation continually. Now, I want to impress that upon you as a complex system, which is nevertheless very simple. The system is simply this. I receives a stimulus from somewhere in the body. He does a computation according to past experience or education or genetic memory. He does a computation on this. This system, it's hard to keep from personifying the awareness of awareness unit. Hi. And it comes from these two switchboards. All right, can come in from this side, but it doesn't matter. So this impulse comes in here from the body. Possibly there are other switch impulses that come in straight from the site to the sensory panel without coming through the motor panel. Although you have to go to the motor panel in order to shift the eyes, for instance. Although the message coming in through the eyes probably goes in the sensory panel. Regardless of all that, nobody knows anything about it. I can say most anything, I'd be correct. Now, probably here you've got this unit. Probably works both ways. As you come in here, it probably takes the current impulse down to where I, which is very sensitive, can register. Now, this way. See, now this would be intensity. And it would be broken down into the sensory strip so that you've got a watt coming in here. By the time it gets to here, maybe goes down to a millionth of a watt. And it's over here at I. Little impulse. Now, I think something goes out here, builds up again into the motors, and something happens in the body. You wonder why I'm stressing this. You're looking right now at the very heart and soul of aberration. Don't look at me. Look at the board. Now, where you got your plugs, you see, it'd take an awful lot of channels to resolve all the computations, put them into effect. Look how this switchboard could be fouled up. Here's I. I is putting in an impulse to this sensory panel over here, and it says, thumb nose at Bill. And here's the sensory panel, and this builds up to a higher impulse, And there goes out all the messages necessary to complete this action. As long as I can receive stimuli, resolve the stimuli according to past experience, and return an impulse to answer the situation, or plan an impulse which can go into effect, I remains in control of the situation. But remember that I is not a 100,000-watt station. I, as powerful as the awareness center is, the whole brain operates on 2.4 watts. Now, the amount that can be handled there is not very high volume. Now, what would happen to I if you got this load here, quite normally, let's say, is along the line of a tenth of a watt, which steps down to a millionth of a watt when it hits here. And supposing all of a sudden 2 watts came over that line, hit this damping operation here is insufficient, and I gets a tenth of a watt. What happens is I blanks out. There's evidently a fuse system in here, and the fuses blow. But these switchboards, under a sudden impulse of that character, are not well protected. They're not well protected. Supposing lightning hit a telephone line and there were insufficient fuses on that telephone line, and you had a couple of thousand plugs in a couple of thousand switchboard holes, and lightning hit in such a way as to carry through those lines and fuse those plugs in those holes. Those calls are then in forevermore. They're in. That is what happens when pain strikes the brain. That's an analogy. Pain creates an energy impulse in the nervous system. The whole nervous system, by the way, was designed to handle, evidently, the impulse of energy and output of energy created on the injury of cells. Now, you take all manner of matter in general, when condensed, stretched, stamped on, pulled apart, and so forth, generates a current. A small group of cells, when struck, will generate a current. You can actually put a galvanometer on one. I imagine if you hooked up a couple of electrodes to a frog and hit him with a sledgehammer, it'd really make a galvanometer jump. That experiment had been overlooked at the time that they were putting electricity into the dead frog and then making the dead frog jump. What's the matter with hitting the frog with a sledgehammer and measuring the current that comes out of him? You'll find out there's current there. In other words, cells, when injured, release current. This is survival. This current or impact is damaging. In order to keep an injured cell then from damaging its immediate neighbors, the body built up, evidently, a nerve conduit system to take away this energy. This energy required a shock absorber. What did you do with it? It finally got to running along. You had special adapted cells then that could stand such an impulse. A big cushion was made. A cushion finally came into being at that point of the body, which is the most liable to impact. Normally, the end of the body, which is usually the forward end, namely the head. You not only got a terrific twisted nerve system there, impact, so it can absorb impact, but you also got a skull to protect it, which is a special kind of nerve cell reformed into bone. You can look it up with, and you'll find out they've known that for a long time, but they never added that. I'm just giving you postulates what happens. All right. Injury then shoots a current through the body, and it gets absorbed throughout the nervous system. The nervous system is actually a blunting, a shock absorber, something of the sort for those inputs. When I starts to make an action, supposing I starts to make an action and gets a heavy impulse in return that's 3 or 4 times the energy, or maybe 100 times the energy that I could put out at that moment. I can put out millionth of a watt, something like that, and he's putting out this impulse. And he's getting an impulse back, which is very high. And this system here is not sufficient to fuse it out. You get unconsciousness. I loses control of the organism. Goes unconscious. But I's intended action has been swamped by a muscular demand, position, and action from the exterior. You see? Now, just as I can say, move arm, and it goes on through and moves the arm, with a pain impact, gets moved, and the whole system will just operate backwards. And move arm will fuse in here. And I tries to move the arm against that impact, and it locks up the switchboard. Let me give you a much better analogy. Here's a little guy, and he's got a job. He's living in a cubicle like this, and this cubicle has a number of hoses coming in here, and it's this guy's job to keep these holes plugged up. He doesn't do too badly. Squirt of water comes in here, and he goes over and he plugs up that hole. And then the square water comes in here and he plugs up that hole. The squirt comes in there and he plugs that one up. That one. He's being very successful. All of a sudden, boom, this one blows. So he plugs it up again. So this one blows. And he rushes over and he plugs that up. And now some of these others blow. And he plugs those up. He can go along for a long time plugging up these holes. How'll he get after a while? He'll get sore after a while. He'll get antagonistic. He'll say, to heck with these darn things. You stay plugged. And then he'll get mad and say, bangity, bangity, bang, and he won't care whether he plugs them or not thoroughly, just as long as he plugs them savagely. And then he'll get scared that he's going to swamp because that place is going to fill up. So he'll plug holes at a great rate. He still can't keep them all plugged. He finally says, to hell with it, and sits down. That is I. On current returns, if these were current returns, which are coming back in to the central awareness of awareness unit, I is trying to compute and figure out. Well, every once in a while, as life goes along, he'll get too heavy an impact. Knocked unconscious, operated on by a doctor, other calamities will occur. There's the picture of this, but it's just a little more complex. Just a little more. Actually, what happens is, evidently, is here are your two panels in the head. These switchboards, you might say, get jammed up. They fix up the fuses. The fuses have to get heavier and heavier because, after all, experience has dictated that the pain coming through is pretty heavy. So we'll have to keep these fuses in there pretty heavy, bus bars and so forth. And the ability of the thing to filter through isn't good. This whole structure through here has to get to a point, finally, where experience, where these heavy pain impacts can be stopped. Well, the only way to do that is to arrest them as they come in. Toughen this up. Don't let through quite so much in the way of energy, because there's been a lot of pain There's pain on this switchboard. So let's make it a little bit harder for energy to get through and hit I. I will go unconscious less, but the same thing happens in reverse. I has a harder time getting out here. I now starts, as time goes on, starts to operate more and more with more and more realization that he is going to be kicked back so that a light order doesn't go out. It has to be a fairly heavy order. He can't say in a cheerful tone of voice, with the right index finger, please move. No. He'll get to the point after a while and he'll say, the right index finger better move. He's got to put out a heavier impulse, in other words. He's got to make this impulse heavier, actually, to get the right finger to move. Now, after a while, there's so much pain come back, and his switchboard has been arrested, so his actions have been so impotent, you might say, from time to time, that he considers the awareness of awareness, post of command, will begin to consider that there's nothing there but resistance. So, every time an order goes through, he puts it all ahead blank. No more of this coasting up and down the river very nicely, but it's all ahead blank all the time. He says, move. And I mean move. See? He turns on the endocrine system at the same time. Anger. He's demonstrating anger in practically every motion. Because he's got to tone everything up. He's got to pull up the endocrine system to actually almost an emergency level, 24 hours a day, just to get his messages out. Just to get his computations out and get them resolved physically. And of course, as soon as he starts that, stuff comes back heavier. He'll go down the line to fear. You go down to grief, you go down to apathy, just in direct ratio to the amount of jam up there is on this switchboard. This switchboard gets awfully jammed up after a while. I can't get it out. What is happening, too, there's a circuit response in there whereby other elements, you understand that when the pain made the arm move, this was more forceful than I being able to make the arm move. And as a result, exterior world begins to command the body. The exterior world begins to command the body, not I. And the decline of the individual on the tone scale is in direct proportion to his ability to move his body in his environment. In direct proportion to his inability to move that body. In other words, he comes down the tone scale, he's less and less able to command and move the body, and is then more and more susceptible, because of these jams on the switchboard, more and more susceptible to exterior stimuli. He sees exterior stimuli. The exterior stimuli goes straight to work on the motor control board, does not go through the sensory board to amount to anything, and the body moves. The sensory board, in other words, is short-circuited straight into the motor control board, and I hasn't got a thing to say about it. You got all these connections frozen on the switchboard. So the fellow sees a dog, and a dog, he's got a jam up here, and it says dog. Dog, bite, pain, run. So this fellow sees a dog and turns around and runs, only it's a Pekingese. That's aberrated. And by the way, people, when they're doing this, sometimes get a glimmering themselves. They observe themselves doing these confounded, foolish things, and they don't seem to be able to do anything about it. This guy gets mad at his wife and hits her over the head with a flat iron, you know, and something of that sort, something mild. And he'd like to be able to check himself, but he seems powerless to do so. What he's got is a jam on the board that says sensory perception. His sensory perceptions have perceived certain voice tones and certain other things in his wife that are jammed into the board, and the board just goes into automatic operation. In other words, the environment around this man is handling him. He's not handling him. And the more the environment can handle him, the more the environment can handle him, the less able he is to behave rationally in the environment, even though he can still think. He can't put the thoughts into proper execution. This, by the way, is hypnotism, too. You notice that as a person goes down the line, people in grief and people in apathy are very hypnotic. They're so hypnotic that when you say something to them, they just accept it literally. As a matter of fact, if you weren't aware of this, you better be, because you can talk to somebody who is in grief on that level of the tone scale, and you can just tell him quietly to do something, and unless there's too much conflict otherwise in the environment, he'll do it. In apathy. In other words, you can take over his body just by talking to him, because your exterior stimuli, that's hypnotism, your exterior stimuli. So you just substitute for his eye. You know how hypnotism is performed. A lot of people, by the way, particularly laymen, are very misinformed on things. They think hypnotism has something to do with spiritualism or something. Hypnotism's been around for a long time. It's a mechanism by which the self-determinism of the individual can be submerged so that he will obey, literally, the orders given to him by another individual. That is all hypnotism is. And the process of hypnotism is to tire the sensory strip, to tire the perceptions. In other words, get the strip shaken up, and to get the guy's muscles to relax. In other words, what the hypnotist is doing is, just by talking to the fellow, gets him to take all of his own keys out of the switchboard. And then the hypnotist purringly puts his in. And they'll stay there. Interesting that a person has to be, however, to be hypnotic, has to be pretty well down the tone scale. The environment must have taken over already. What the hypnotist is doing is simply taking advantage of an enormous amount of preparation. Now, people who are hypnotic are very bad people to have around on a job, because they will look fixedly at a board, let us say, that they're supposed to operate, throw switches on. And they will look at this board, and if they have to fix their eyes too long on that board, they will go out. They will sit there with their eyes wide open, inactive. And sometimes that period of inaction will only last for seconds. Sometimes it'll last for minutes. They appear to be abstracted, and they think they are. They think they're thinking about something or dreaming about something. Actually, they've just become fixated on a piece of bright metal or something. People low on the tone scale will fixate. They will fixate suddenly, particularly when they are tired, because when the body is tired, then I is less able to make a connection, and the environment is more able to make a connection. There is evidently insufficient internal energy to drive the body. That's what is known as being tired. And at the time the body is tired, the environment can take over the body and push it around, because there's less resistance in here. People, then, you can see, would be low on the tone scale to the degree that they were able to handle their own bodies. And as they drift down the tone scale, you see that a standard or fixed level of endocrine response would be necessary to handle themselves. You know, the fellow's got to be mad all the time, really, to handle himself, because he requires that much output just to get over the level of energy charge. Furthermore, he has to turn on so much velocity or so much volume with I. He has to turn on so much volume that he turns on the endocrine system too, and it'll stay on. And then, quite in addition to that, the exterior environment will start hooking him up, and it'll hook up his endocrine system, just like it hooks this up, because that's just another switchboard. And he'll stay hooked in permanently that way. Any person who is highly rational, a highly rational person, is able to hook in and pull out his switch links at will. In other words, he can call any part of the body at will. He can start or stop any operation of the body at will. Even when he turns up a little bit of anger, something of the sort, he can also turn off the anger. In the first place, actually, a person who is very high on the tone scale doesn't get angry so much as he just turns on more energy. And he'll get this anger response is minor. It's when the whole endocrine system becomes aberrated that it starts to grow up, where the adrenals will get way oversized and so forth. All right. That is an extrapolation, then, on the difference between self-determinism and exterior determinism. As the exterior world begins to take over an individual more and more and more and more and more, so that individual becomes less and less and less efficient, less and less and less able to survive, and is less and less desirable to have on a job or in your periphery. For instance, if you take this, just as an example, you have a person that's at 0.5. You find it very easy to handle this person. You say, go here, go there, do this, do that. It's fine. You've got this person well under control. This person's very amenable to what you're saying. And you trust this person. Oh, yeah. You trust in a rabbit. And anybody can come along and throw the switch. Now, your worst enemy comes along that wants to know anything and everything that you're doing and wants to louse you up like fire drill. And all he does is get a cross-reference on your subject. And he just says so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, and your subject turns around at 0.5, just like a rabbit. A 0.5, for instance, can be talked to by a union leader at a great rate. Capital is selling you out. The reason we are at war is because American industry and American executives want us at war. Your 0.5 saying, and they say, now here's this gun. Now you take this gun and you shoot the next executive who walks out of that door. Uh-huh. Boom. There's no moral interruption. In order to be moral, in order to be ethical, I's got to have something to say about it. The reason why 2 is a margin, there are two reasons why 2.0 is the dividing line. Up above 2.0, the person is tending towards survival. And 2.0 down, they're tending towards destruction and death. The reason why, two things. The mechanism of death becomes necessary after the individual is no longer able to assist life in its conquest. And the other one is that he's getting down to a point where below 2.0, the individual is more than 50% being handled by the exterior environment. The people and items around him are regulating his conduct to such a degree that his conduct is irrational. It is as rational as his environment. If everybody around him is acting rationally, then he'll act rationally. No more, no less. You walk in on a person at 1.5, 1.1, something like that, and you start acting in some other fashion, and you'll get the response. Down in the melee, and as a kid, I ran into one. I thought this was. I was young and open-mouthed and chewing on a straw, practically. And I walked down a street, and just north of Singapore. I walked down the street, and a friend that was with me pointed to me, and he says, "There," he says, is a slayer. It's a different word than that, but I said, "A what?" A slayer. Boy, he kills people. Oh, no, that's a native word. He says, watch. And he looked at this fellow over there and he says, and this fellow looked at him, did this. This fellow went down like this, and the other guy went down like this. This fellow went this way, the other fellow goes this way. The guy was a mirror image. Anything you did, so on. And then finally, he took a rock and threw it at him, and it broke the guy's report. The guy went off down the way. He said, there are quite a few of them around here. There's evidently some drug, he said, they smoke that does this. Actually, that guy is clear down on the tone scale. Imagine my surprise down in a southern town about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, to go into a psychiatrist's office. I was still trying to work with psychiatry. And to find a psychiatrist that was a slayer. He didn't know it, poor guy. He was all ready to pass in his chips. I sat there. I noticed it when I first reached for a cigarette. He reached for a cigarette a moment later. So I dropped my cigarette, and he dropped his cigarette. And he went on talking to me as though nothing were happening. So I crossed my legs. He crossed his legs. I crossed my legs the other way. He crossed his the other way. Boy, the last thing in the world this guy ought to be doing is associating with psychos. Because look at the behavior patterns he was getting. And that's what happens to those poor guys, by the way. Actually, I'm not a tenth as rough as psychiatry's been on me, but they're up against this terrible environment continually. And they start skidding, they get low down on the tone scale, the next thing you know, they're picking it all up on an hypnotic level, and they're jamming through. Now, you understand that the reason an individual gets down the tone scale is a movement is ordered by I, but countermanded by the environment. A movement is ordered by I and is countermanded by the environment. A stimulus comes in. I tries to react to this stimulus by ordering a movement. The environment says move otherwise or don't move. And I is balked. And I is unable to direct the motion of the body. I've just got through telling you really all there is to know about human aberration. An impulse comes in and tells I to do something, and I tries to do it, and the environment countermands it. The thing says, it hurts here, move. So I tries to move. He says, move. But nothing is happening. He says, move the arm. The arm doesn't move. Move the arm. The arm's hurting and it doesn't move. So I says, get up and walk out of this place. Body doesn't move. So I starts throwing over all kinds of switchboard mechanisms and so forth to do so, and those are liable to be canceled out, and the environment switchboard connectors are liable to fuse. That is a holder on the time track, you auditors. However, if I gets up a tremendous effort to move and finally accomplishes it, the effort to move is such that he leaves everything plugged in at such a heavy rate that he has what you call a bouncer. If I has had to throw out so much energy and has had so much energy coming in that the whole board shorts, you've got a grouper. But it's the same thing. It's the environment countermanding the orders of I trying to countermand the orders of the environment, resulting in fixed behavior patterns. Fixed patterns, which reduce the self-determinism of I, and so you get an individual going on down the tone scale. You get a person who chronically, then, because of the exterior environment, the only way he can possibly get through this maze of locked, and by the way, that's what a lock is, locked panel connections. He gets through a locked board only by being angry. He has to get angry to get through the board to get any motion at all, and his motions are all anger motions, one way or the other. Now, he has to get up the stimulus and run the preparation of fear in order to get through the board. So he's got to tell the body you're in deadly danger all the time just to get any motion out of the body. Or he tells the body, well, you can't get through it all. The body is mostly left unmanned, and you get the hypnotic levels of grief and apathy. Notice an individual when he tries to move a piece of mess. First he gets conservative about it, and then he gets antagonistic, and then he gets angry if it doesn't move. And then you get scared of the darn thing if it still doesn't move. You decide that's really something and so forth. In the same way, if you take a man trying to move, let's say a foreman, trying to handle a group of men, and these men don't do what he says, he gets kind of antagonistic toward them. They still don't do what he says, he starts to get angry at them. And if he can't move them after that, he begins to believe he's lost his grip and he'll back up on the job. That is, would be just your normal cycle where he isn't securing cooperation. If he is at the level where he's angry at them all the time, they get afraid. That's another extrapolation of the tone scale. Took a little bit longer to get over. I'll have to go over this other stuff much more rapidly, because I want to tell you just a very, very little bit about a triangle in Dianetics, the ARC triangle, with which you can work a lot of magic. Let's take a break right now.